Welcome to another episode of what I like to call Just the Discs. My name's Brian Sauer, and this is my podcast about Blu-rays. This week, I'm kind of going back to one of the original sort of format things I was doing with the show, which is just a random pile of stuff. I mean, there are some thematic connections between some of these movies, but they're a mix of different labels from Kino Lorber to Warner Archive to Olive Films to Vinegar Syndrome to Twilight Time. So it's a little bit of a mishmash, but a lot of films I'm interested in, so I'm just going to go through the pile as I often do. First up is one from Kino, and I was really excited about this one, maybe unreasonably so. It's Clambake from 1967, starring Elvis Presley.
You just said the magic word.
Clambake?
Yeah.
Hey, Clambake, don't have a Clambake.
It's Elvis cooking up a storm of entertainment in Clambake. Elvis throws the wildest beach party since they invented the bikini and the beat.
Oh, shut up.
Elvis go-goes on water.
I won't be missed.
Go-goes wild with bikes.
Things in life are free. Who needs money? Not me. Get a rhythm going nice.
Go-goes with beachniks and bikinis.
The Orange Bowl Regatta has a purse of $10,000. You win it, we'll split it 50-50.
It's a bikini bake. It's a song bake. It's a fun bake. It's Elvis in Clam Bake.
And now, the back says, rock and roll legend Elvis Presley sizzles as a lovelorn millionaire in this riveting and romantic musical romp with eight original Elvis tunes, vying for the attentions of the lovely Shelley Fabares, Girl Happy, Spin Out. Elvis finds himself caught up in a rivalry with Playboy Bill Bixby, TV's The Incredible Hulk, against the tuneful background of comedy, romance, and speedboat racing. Clambake is pleasing escapist entertainment and the wildest party to hit the beach since they invented the beach ball. It's a hip version of The Prince and the Pauper as Elvis relinquishes his oil baron father's fortune and trades identities with a penniless water ski instructor, Will Hutchins, from TV's Sugarfoot, to learn about life from the bottom up. Short on cash, but long in determination, he repairs a radically designed powerboat in order to win the regatta and the affection of a girl who's determined to marry Rich. Gary Merrill, All About Eve, co-stars in this fun-filled comedy musical. So it's kind of silly, but I really like this movie. Sometimes, if you ask me, I might say it's my favorite Elvis movie, which is, I know, kind of crazy considering he made quote-unquote good films like Viva Las Vegas and Jailhouse Rock and Flaming Star or what have you. But this one, I don't know, there's just something, it's very, very simplistic, and the theme song is so incredibly catchy that once you get it in your head, it's really hard, it's really hard to get it out, which I like and don't like. And my wife feels the same way. In fact, when this Blu-ray arrived, I started singing the song, and my wife's a big Elvis movie fan from when she was younger. And so she knows this movie and this song, and she was like, please, please don't sing that because it's going to get caught in my head. And so I had to stop. But that said, once you get it going, I'm going to, here's a little clip of it.
Clam bake, gonna have a clam bake. Hey, clam bake, gonna have a clam bake.
And you can kind of see what I mean there about it being catchy. Anyway, this one is cool because it's the DVD, I don't even think was anamorphic, 69, so it's nice to get a new-ish looking, I don't know if this is a brand new transfer or not, but anyway, it's a 2.35:1 movie, and it does look a lot better than I've seen it look ever. So I'm very excited to have this one in the collection now in a good-looking print. So the special features included with this disc are as follows. Audio commentary by Videodrome's Gideon Kennedy, Matt Owensby, and John Robinson. And it just has a side note. Opened in 1998, Videodrome is now Atlanta, Georgia's only video rental store. So this is a cool sort of scholar/fan commentary, and I definitely dug it. But I'm, like I said, very excited that Kino put this one out and that people can watch it on endless loop and keep the song in their head for weeks at a time. Just as a quick aside, here's what Michael Weldon had to say in his Psychotronic Film Encyclopedia about Clambake. Elvis Presley, a Texas oil heir, goes to Florida where he switches identities with a poor water skiing instructor, Will Hutchins, and falls for his first student, Shelley Fabares. Bill Bixby, a playboy boat racer, is a rival for her charms. Elvis races a boat designed by Gary Merrill and sings Who Needs Money with Angelique Pettyjohn. And Angelique Pettyjohn is one of those cult actresses that when you see her, you'll totally remember her. She was in some Star Trek episodes. She was in some movies around this time. Just has a really unique look, specific and unforgettable. Very pretty eyes and whatnot. But yeah, I think I just like Bill Bixby in this too. He's just very sort of cheeky and obnoxious, and it's fun to see him play this kind of role. I'm not used to it, so it's very entertaining to see him opposite Elvis Presley. So next up is another sort of beach movie, if you will. One of the more famous beach movies from the 60s, and that's Where the Boys Are from 1960.
Hi, I'm Alan Arkush, and I have a problem. I watch certain movies over and over and over again, and many of them are not good movies. But they give me pleasure, guilty pleasure. And one of my favorite guilty pleasures of all time is the original Where the Boys Are from 1960. Not the remake, the original. And today, on Trails from Hell, we'll see why I'm guilty as charged.
Girls! Girls! Girls!
Where did the guilt begin? It began in the Lee Theater in Fort Lee, New Jersey, in a packed audience of adolescents who love this movie. It's funny, it promises sex, and it gives you lots of location photography of Fort Lauderdale. It made you feel like you were on spring break. It was a big hit. In fact, teenagers from across the country all descended on Fort Lauderdale that year and started a tradition, which the movie sort of hints at, where kids go down south for spring break. 45 years later, MTV is still doing TV shows about spring break in Florida. We really, really like the movie. I really like Connie Francis in the movie. She had a bunch of hits at the time. She was quite a big pop singer, and she was talked into doing the movie, and she gives a pretty good comic performance. When it came time to have a theme song for the movie, she said, "Can I have my friends from Queens write the song?" And there was some discussion, well, who are they? Well, his name's Neil Sedaka and Harry Greenfield, and of course the song went to number four. But my favorite person in the movie is Paula Prentice, all 5'10" of her. This is her screen debut, and it was really hard to find someone who could play opposite her. But Jim Hutton was a contract player, and the two of them had a lot of chemistry together. In fact, they did four movies together. My favorite guy in the movie is Frank Gorshin, the impressionist, soon to be the Riddler. Now, there's George Hambledon. He's kind of a stiff. He was the big catch. He had a boat, he was rich, and he was always hitting on the girls. Dolores Hart is really the lead in the picture, and she has a problem. She needs to know how far should a good girl go on a date. And it's something that she brings up throughout the picture. She's a veteran of three Elvis movies, and after she had thought about sex a lot in this picture, it must have really preyed on her mind, because 2 years later, she joined the nunnery. That's right, Dolores Hart, because of Elvis in this movie, became a nun. In fact, today she's known as Mother Superior Dolores Hart, and she's the only nun who is a voting member of the Motion Picture Academy. Now, Frank Gorshin, let's get back to Frank. I love him in this picture. He's a member of a dialectic jazz group. This group is so uncompromising, they pay the audience to listen to their jazz. And his hep talk is quite funny, and the jazz that he plays by Peter Ruggiero is pretty good. They perform numbers that are sort of a satire of jazz titles like Shakespeare meets Satchel Paige on Hampstead Heath. The movie is full of hijinks and fun, but MGM decided to not film the entire book because the last third of the book has the gang going to Cuba to fight with Fidel Castro for the revolution. Imagine Connie Francis and Fidel Castro. Well, MGM, if you're interested, I'm available. I would film that final third of the novel. The audience needs to know.
Where the boys are, that's for me.
Next time you have a pajama party, this is the movie to run. Invite the whole gang over.
Come on, live it up with their laugh sessions, their romantic sessions, and those way out jam sessions.
Now, this is a Warner Archive Blu-ray of sort of a cult item that I think I first read about in Danny Perry's, one of his cult movies books, and that was the reason I first saw it. I think it's notable for the cast, which I'll mention in a second, and just for being sort of a zeitgeisty movie that sort of, I think, just captured all the imaginations of a lot of young people in 1960. So I'm going to read from Danny Perry's entry for the movie in Guide for the Film Fanatic. And he says, cult favorite has college girls Dolores Hart, Paula Prentiss, who wants children, Connie Francis, who sings Neil Sedaka's title song, and naive, vulnerable, and very sexy Yvette Mimieux going to Fort Lauderdale during spring break. They have many adventures, find future husbands or heartbreak. Hart gets to see if she really believes in sex before marriage. Film is dated in many ways, but it's surprisingly more advanced than other films of the period in regard to sex. It is about sex. The dialogue about sex is frank. It's clear that our four girls are in search of boys for sex. The four leads are very appealing. They all have a sense of humor, and their characters are believable. It's rare to see an early film in which the girls are supportive friends rather than rivals. Considering that Hart became a nun, it's interesting that her character startles her teacher and dean with admissions of sexual longings. An enjoyable, offbeat, interesting film with appealing performances by lead actresses. Remade as Where the Boys Are, 84, from a novel by Glendon Swarthout, directed by Henry Levin, also with Jim Hutton, George Hamilton, developing his tan, Frank Gorshin, Barbara Nichols, Jack Crucian, Chill Wills, as the police chief who wages, quote, war against higher education. So, yeah, it will seem a little dated probably to watch it now, but I still think there's something, nostalgic isn't the right word, but something appealing about this kind of movie, although it does take a bit of a dark turn in the last act that is more having to be hinted at because of sort of the darkness of it, which is a little bit unexpected and, I don't know, up to that point, not really set up necessarily. So that's not my favorite part of the movie, but it's still an enjoyable romp overall. And the back says, four coeds from snowbound Penmore U know that the only place to be during spring break is where the boys are. The rights and wrongs of the spring migration of thousands of college students to sunny Fort Lauderdale are celebrated in an era-defining film that combines a cast of 60s up-and-comers with youthful hijinks and cautionary will-she-or-won't-she storyline of sex and romance. Among the girls seeking the perfect tan and man are Dolores Hart, Yvette Mimieux, Paula Prentiss, and Connie Francis, who also performs the hit title tune and the zippy Turn on the Sunshine. Among the guys, George Hamilton, Jim Hutton, and Frank Gorshin. So many characters for love, so little time. So this movie opens with a really amusing narration by Paul Frees, and you may not know that name, but you'll recognize the voice. I have always known him as the guy who does the voice narration in Disney's Haunted House ride, Disneyland and Disney World. He's still the voice of that. And so he appeared in movies and cartoons, and it makes it feel like a Frank Tashlin movie or something at the beginning with this narration. And then, you know, to see George Hamilton and Jim Hutton, who is Timothy Hutton's dad and who you'll totally recognize as Timothy Hutton's dad immediately when you see him. It's entertaining to see those two in prominent roles. And then Frank Gorshin just plays like a ridiculous band leader, I guess, of a jazz group, sort of a beatnik type guy with like Coke bottle glasses that plays the upright bass. And I don't know, he's pretty amusing, but seems really old to be in the mix. Regardless, it's entertaining. This Warner Archive Blu-ray looks good and has the following special features. Commentary by Paula Prentiss, Connie Francis and Paula Prentiss in Where the Boys Are, a retrospective, a Fort Lauderdale premiere newsreel, and a theatrical trailer. So it's nice to have insights from the actors that were in the film, looking back to from sort of today. So next up is another one that sort of ties into this, but was came out much later, and that is a movie called Shag from 1988.
Luann, that was all turn off.
Guess that means we just have to go to Myrtle Beach.
Oh, not today. Yes, later.
They were the last days of innocence.
Would any of y'all like to dance?
No, thank you.
For a country.
Well, this is awful, man. I mean, look at the guy's face. He's desperate.
For a generation.
Get on your shagging shoes.
For four best friends who wanted it to last.
Turn on the radio! Woo! I was
standing on the corner. I'm not allowed to go to Myrtle Beach.
Where are y'all from?
None of your beeswax.
Nothing is going to happen between us.
Kate's.
I can't go around sleeping with every boy that likes me.
Bridget Fonda.
Does anyone feel like dancing?
Tyrone Power Jr.
Y'all must come down to Myrtle Beach. We'll surprise your folks.
From Ken Ortega, the choreographer of Dirty Dancing, comes Shag, the movie.
Laren Moulton gives it 2.5 stars. It stars Phoebe Cates, Scott Coffey, Bridget Fonda, Annabeth Gish, Robert Russler, Tyrone Power Jr., Shirley Ann Field. Moulton says, Southern Belle high school grad Cates is about to get married, so her three girlfriends decide to take her on a, quote, last fling weekend to Myrtle Beach. Pleasant outing set in 1963 with an unusually appealing and talented young cast. So I agree with that. It's trying to look at the back of the owl Blu-ray. Sort of encompasses a similar sentiment. This warm-hearted romantic comedy stars Phoebe Cates of Fast Times, Bridget Fonda, as young girls on the loose in Myrtle Beach circa 1963, Carson McBride, Cates, who's counting down the days until her wedding, and Malena Buller, Fonda, the capricious daughter of a preacher, will sneak away from home along with friends Caroline Carmichael, Annabeth Gish from Mystic Pizza, and Luann Clutterbuck, Paige Hanna from Gremlins 2, for big-time fun and shag dancing on the South Coast. Through romantic entanglements, broken hearts, and some of life's hard truths, these friends are in it for the long haul. Film critic Roger Ebert had this to say about Shag, the movie. It has a charm based on its innocence, its conviction. The actors in Shag are some of the best of the younger generation in Hollywood, and they treat their material with the humor and delicacy it deserves. So this one, for me, it had been a long time. This was a big renter at the video store I worked at in college in the 90s. A lot of girls like checking this one out over and over again, so it was quite popular. I think we even moved it to our what we called our college classics section because it got rented so much, and we had multiple copies of it. So it's something of a cult favorite that has dipped out of the movie discussion until this Blu-ray, so it's kind of nice to have it back. I think there's some differences in the soundtrack. It's got a lot of period songs reminiscent of maybe something like Dirty Dancing soundtrack that I think was changed for the original VHS release and has been restored on the DVD and this Blu-ray. But I think it throws some people off because they're used to hearing certain tunes in certain parts of the movie, and that has changed between those releases. But regardless, I think it's a really cool period piece. I like all the actresses. I like Scott Coffey. There's this guy who was in Satisfaction, and he was in a few other 80s movies. Can't think of what else. But then Robert Russler, of course, from Weird Science and Vamp. He's a lot of fun. I like him as an actor. Like, it reminds me of an earlier Vince Vaughn or something. So this is a fun little movie, and I'm glad that Olive took the time to put it out. Next up, we have one from Vinegar Syndrome. This is My Chauffeur from 1985, I believe.
Welcome to the world of the rich and famous, where my is a household word. My home, my car, my girl, my staff, my.
Mail for you.
Oh, my. Casey Meadows, by an act of fate and inspiration, is about to become... My chauffeur.
She is a female.
Yes, I am.
Ooh, baby.
He gave her the animal for her first assignment.
What?
A blue woman with a blue dog.
Never in the 40-year history of Brentwood Limousine Limited has an assignment been so bollocksed.
She was worth 20,000 points.
I didn't know that.
And now it is time for the gratuitous nudity.
You kidnapped an ambassador. These are complaints from all over town about your escapades last night.
I'm not a lady.
I can see that.
You?
Take your butt off the ceiling, put it back in the seat, drive the car.
Very good. Very adult. I like people who can express themselves openly and share their feelings. Nothing hurts like love.
My.
Marry me.
My chauffeur.
Do you think I am? An idiot?
Kiss me, stupid.
My, are you in for a big surprise?
Bingo!
My chauffeur.
And it says, Casey Meadows, Deborah Foreman of Valley Girl, a dishwasher at an Italian restaurant, has just received an unbelievable job offer. The opportunity to work as a driver at the prestigious Brentwood Limousine Limited. Much to the shock and frustration of its posh all-male chauffeur staff, Casey accepts the offer, but as she begins to settle into her new position, she discovers that working as a driver is more grueling than she could have anticipated, finding herself having to contend with stone singers, devious diplomats, and other raucous clients. She's quickly at her wit's end, but when she picks up a young man named Battle, Sam J. Jones of Flash Gordon, who's just been dumped by his girlfriend, a budding romance quickly begins, only for Casey to discover that Battle is her boss's son. Writer-director David Baird's lighthearted cult comedy My Chauffeur playfully combines comedy and romance with adept observations on sexism and class conflict. A late-night TV staple, Vinegar Syndrome, brings the 80s classic to Blu-ray, newly restored from its original negative and featuring an all-new interview with its leading lady. So, yeah, I may have mentioned it on the show before, but I kind of adore Deborah Foreman. She's just one of those actresses that I sort of grew up with in both Valley Girl and April Fool's Day, and, of course, Real Genius. And so I've always had sort of a long-standing crush on her. So I tend to view her films with a much lighter critical approach. I just like seeing her in movies. I think she's incredibly charming and has a charisma that just has always hooked me. She's also in a movie called Lunatics, A Love Story, which is not really available on video and which I talked about on a semi-recent 90s cult films episode of Pure Cinema. She's really great in that too, with Sam Raimi's brother Ted Raimi. Just a really interesting offbeat romance. But this is a cool little movie and one that I was really excited Vinegar Syndrome was giving their red carpet treatment to. I'm just going to read a real quick excerpt, a quick bit from Michael Weldon from the Psychotronic Video Guide. He says, My Chauffeur, Vestron, 1985. Deborah Foreman becomes the first female chauffeur for an L.A. company. Sam J. Jones, Flash Gordon, co-stars with Howard Hessman, E.G. Marshall, Penn & Teller, and Cindy Beale. This film, which copies My Tutor, is from Crown International. It's true, it is a very similar storyline to My Tutor, but I prefer My Chauffeur probably because of the Deborah factor. This is a nice special edition and looks great. And Vinegar Syndrome has put together a nice package of special features, including License to Drive, new interview with star Deborah Foreman, commentary track with director David Beard and Leland Crook, the co-star in the movie, and a commentary track with Jeff McKay, who's a production assistant on the movie. It's also got an isolated soundtrack, original theatrical trailer, TV spots, versatile cover, and so forth. Great disc, good movie for 80s fans, definitely worth getting. Next up, I've got a couple in a row from Twilight Time. The first is the latest in their Woody Allen collection, if you will, and this is Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Afraid to Ask, from 1972.
Everything you always wanted to know about sex but were afraid to ask. If you want to know how this man made a movie out of this book.
Brain room. Come in, motor function 12.
Scratch the left leg.
The leg has been scratched.
Brain to stomach. Brain to stomach.
Don't like the brain. Over.
Food coming down.
What kind?
Fettuccine.
Italian food coming down.
Bring me my fool.
Good evening, Your Majesty. It's great to be back here at the palace. You know what the palace is? That's 24 living rooms and a dungeon.
Oh, God, no, no, no. Oh, God. Ah! 'Tis the chastity belt that the jealous king hath fastened on me that no man but him shallst have the goods of the body.
It's a bad break for all of us here at the palace.
What seems to be the trouble?
I am in love with a sheep.
I beg your pardon?
You have a very, very fascinating fetish.
That's what they called me at Matthews and Johnson's clinic. Mad. Because I had visions of explorations in sexual areas undreamed of by lesser human beings. It was I who first discovered how to make a man impotent by hiding his hat.
I think it could work. If we gave it a chance.
Don't you think you should be ashamed of this?
It's most distasteful in view of the fact that the sheep was under 18 years old.
So what?
You've been a naughty rabbi.
Blasphemy!
Hey, we're gonna make babies!
If you want to know how Woody Allen made a movie out of this book, you'll have to see the movie.
It says, this is the writer-director Woody Allen's hilarious 1972 sketch comedy adaptation of Dr. David Rubin's best-selling self-help book. It features a superb cast including Gene Wilder, Burt Reynolds, Lynn Redgrave, John Carradine, Tony Randall, Louise Lasser, and Allen himself in highly amusing, if often embarrassing, segments designed to answer such questions as, do aphrodisiacs work? Note particularly the immortal Wilder in the tragic, what is sodomy? Yeah, this is a very memorable movie. The Burt Reynolds scene with Woody is particularly unforgettable. I won't spoil it. But from Danny Perry's Guide for the Film Fanatic, he says, odd entry in Woody Allen oeuvre, divided critics. I find it interesting and significant, less as a satire parody than as a daring experiment for Allen because he severely tested audiences' embarrassment level as much as Lenny Bruce did years before in nightclubs and as Monty Python would do years later. Tell comes from Dr. David Rubin's serious pop sexology book, but Woody Allen's film is compromised of several comic vignettes, each dealing with a sexual perversion, that have nothing to do with Rubin and won't serve anyone as a sexual primer. Episodes, mostly starring Allen, vary greatly in quality. The sequence in which Gene Wilder falls in love with a sheep is a good test for a viewer's tolerance level. It's inoffensive because all viewers will recognize that it was included solely to elicit audience response. Allen is funny as medieval Bob Hope-like court jester who gets his spear stuck in a queen's chastity belt, and later, in a subtitled sequence, as an Italian who must put up with Louise Lasser's unquenchable desire to make love in public places. Also with Carradine as a mad scientist with a weird creation, Anthony Quayle, Lynn Redgrave, Tony Randall, Meredith McRae, Jeffrey Holder, Regis Philbin. Yeah, it's a fun little weird movie, and as anthology-type stories go, your mileage will vary with each of them. I do like that he does his own sort of Fellini take, which is not, you know, the first time he would do that. And he definitely makes fun of and slash embraces the sort of look and feel of a Fellini movie in that section of the movie. But it's a good, enjoyable entry. I mean, the Gene Wilder and the sheep thing is a little weird, but it's neat to see him in a role that I think a lot of people have forgotten about. This disc just has an isolated music track and original theatrical trailer, but is a nice addition to your Twilight Time Woody Allen collection. Next up is another Twilight Time disc, this one from director Sam Fuller. It's called The Crimson Kimono, and it's from 1959.
Chris, did anything happen tonight? Between you and Joe. You mean you want to marry her?
You wouldn't have said it that way if I were white.
It can never work out, Chris. If he feels like that, what can I expect from you?
Everything. Because I love you. You are dead, Chris, if Hansel sees that sketch you made of him.
This is Mr. Hansel, Chris. The sketch you made of me for the police was your last work of art.
The back says, Maverick writer-director Samuel Fuller's The Crimson Kimono is a noirish tale of two Los Angeles cops, James Shigeta and Glenn Corbett, attempting to solve the murder of a stripper in Little Tokyo. But along the way, Fuller typically introduces themes of racism and sexual identity, particularly when a young woman, Victoria Shaw, a possible key witness, enters the picture, disrupting the relationship of the two police partners.
This is what I have to tell you into another picture I made, which you brought up, called Crimson Kimono. Now, in there, the simple story is two friends from the war, one white, one Japanese, live together. They fall in love with a white woman. They're both nice men, detectives, cops. She falls in love with the Japanese boy. Now, the head of Columbia said, okay, we go. But, this is true, wonderful man, he said, in the beginning, can't you just make a little bit where the white man is just a little bit of a son of a bitch? Oh, I said, then we are going against my idea.
To give her a reason.
Then everybody will say, ah, he's no good, and say to the girl, yes, go to the Japanese fellow, he's good. That's no good. Used to make pictures like that. David Wark Griffith made Broken Blossoms.
Yeah.
Now, that's a very racist story.
You think so?
Oh, yeah! One, he has Richard Barthelmess made up as Chinese.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. All the audience know he's a white actor, he's a star.
Yeah.
So if he touches her, they don't do this. He can even kiss her. It's Richard Barthelmess, number one. She lived with her father. Every day, he had nothing to do, he hits her. Bang, bang. Did you see the picture?
Yes.
Bang. She was a mouse, remember?
Yes.
She came in, she was afraid. Bingo. This is his exercise because he's a fighter. Now, when she finds safety with this young Chinese fellow, then Mr. Griffith felt he was secure. He is brave. He's not brave. He was a coward. He was a coward. If the girl, of her own volition, of her own feeling, went to Richard Barthelmess, I'd buy it. But she was driven to him because of physical violence. Now, that's bad. Not only bad, that's childish. It's very childish. Now, in Crimson Kimono, the important thing was that as long as I kept the two of them level, I also have to be honest with the Japanese American. So that in the end, and the Japanese loved it in Little Tokyo, that's this neighborhood in Los Angeles, that they like. In the end, when the girl picks him and she walks off with him, he says to the white friend of his, are we still friends? That's an important thing. And he doesn't take the hand. And he says, listen, the white man says, listen, I got angry because I was jealous. I don't care who took her. And the Japanese fellow says, bullshit. If I were white, you wouldn't feel that way. And when he leaves, I want to make sure he and him has racism. And we force it. That's the story I want.
So, yeah, this is a cool Fuller movie, one that for a long time wasn't available. I think it came out as part of a box set years ago now, but I remember seeing this one when I was in a full-on Fuller sort of phase and catching it at UCLA, I think, before it was available on home video. I don't know if this one had a home video release on VHS even at the time, so you had to catch it on Turner Classic or something like that. And I remember seeing it and very much enjoying it with a crowd, and I'm very psyched that Twilight Time is also, in addition to Woody Allen, cranking out a lot of Sam Fuller releases. This is the second one in like 2 months, I think, so hopefully those will keep coming. The disc includes isolated music track, something called Sam Fuller Storyteller, and then Curtis Hanson, The Culture of the Crimson Kimono, which is both good little features. Lastly, I've got a couple more from Kino Lorber, the first being Silkwood.
On November 13th, 1974, Karen Silkwood, an employee at an Oklahoma nuclear facility, was on her way to meet with a reporter from the New York Times. She never got there.
Name?
Karen Silkwood.
Drew Stevens?
Dolly Pellicker.
What about the radiation effects from all this material?
We've all seen the poor guy suffering the effects of sunburn. Well, radiation's like that.
There was a contamination in our section. They're saying that you did it.
I just hate people talking about me that way.
Karen, the company's got to blame somebody, otherwise it's their fault.
Sounds like they're trying to get rid of you.
I wish I could take care of you better.
I'm doing something good.
I know what you're doing. You're the wrong person to be doing
it. I was just thinking, if you'd ever quit, come away with me.
I can't quit now.
What are you doing in there?
I'm so scared now. They're trying to kill me.
And the back says, the controversial true story that inflamed a nation. Meryl Streep stars in this stunning, provocative, and daring drama about one woman's struggle against a huge corporation. Karen Silkwood, Streep, lives a free-spirited existence with two friends, Drew Stevens, Kurt Russell, and Dolly Pelliker, Cher, who work with her at an Oklahoma nuclear facility. It's only when she discovers she's been exposed to radiation that Karen's conscience awakens, and soon she is digging for evidence of wrongdoing at her company. But her sudden zeal for safer working conditions may come at a high price as she alienates friends and possibly even puts her own life in peril. Excellent direction by Mike Nichols, with a screenplay by Nora Ephron and Alice Arlen, and a stellar supporting cast that includes Craig T. Nelson, Diana Scarwood, Fred Ward, Ron Silver, Charles Hallahan, Joseph Sommer, David Strathairn, M. Emmett Walsh, Tess Harper, and Will Patton. Nominated for 5 Academy Awards, actress for Streep, supporting actress Cher, director Nichols, original screenplay, Ephron and Arlen, and editing for Sam Osteen. So this is one that I had seen, but boy, it had been a heck of a long time. And so it was just like watching a new movie for me. And the cast, as I read it there, is so remarkable that just about every scene is interesting, because there's somebody in it even delivering small little bits of dialogue that just totally captivated me. You know, I love seeing Fred Ward and David Strathairn show up in little bit parts, you know. But it is a Mike Nichols movie, and it's well-directed and well-handled, and I also just love seeing Kurt Russell in basically a supporting role, but in a great sort of elevating the film kind of supporting role. It's just, he's something else, and he plays this sort of blue-collar character really well and believably.
Well, what I remember was meeting Mike Nichols, and it was great. Mike, when I met him, I was doing a play. I was, you know, making a career move, doing a play in Los Angeles. I wasn't a stage actor, so I'd never done one, so I was going to do. And out of that came an interview with Mike Nichols to do this movie that he was going to be coming back after 7 years of not having made any movies. And Meryl Streep was going to play that part. And I think Cher was cast. She was going to be Meryl. I'm pretty sure that was the case. And they were casting the guy who's kind of, with both of them as friends and lovers and that kind of thing. And I went to meet Mike, and I knew who Mike Nichols was. I'd loved the Graduate, and I loved Catch 22 and once and so on. This would be interesting to talk about that stuff. And he sits down and he says right away, he said, now what would I know you from? Now I was 32 years old. I'd starred in a lot of movies. I'd been around for 22 years. But it struck me as very simple. Well, if you haven't seen me, you wouldn't know me from anything. So I said, nothing. What would you know me from? Nothing. I mean, that's clearly
the answer.
The answer. The reality is you wouldn't know me. If you don't know me, you wouldn't know me from, you've just said you don't know me. And he went, okay. He said, do you want to read? And I said, well, I don't want to, but I hate reading. I said, when you cold read, you just read yourself out of stuff. So I said, but if you want to read, I'm here. Let's read. And he went, nah, I guess not. No. And we talked for a few minutes, and he said, great, nice meeting you. And I thought, okay, and that was that. And very quickly, Mike Nichols wanted me to do the movie. So I was going to do the movie. And then about, maybe a month and a half into it, somebody asked him, because it wasn't me, why was Kurt your choice here? Because at that time, I was still the kind of actor that people were going, why is Kurt Russell working with Mike Nichols? I don't get, Cher, what? I get Meryl Streep, I get that, but But it was a mix that he was looking for, right? And he said, oh, it's really simple. He said, when I first met Kurt, I asked him one question, and he answered it honestly. He said, and I needed someone who the audience knew was absolutely 100% telling the truth, always. And I said, what was the question? He said, I asked you, what would I know you from? And you said, nothing. I said, so I had my guy. He said, yep, that guy will tell you the truth. Well, that's what you're going to get. So that was what he wanted to see in that character. And also someone who would portray a guy who was honestly in love with Meryl Streep's character and could make you feel that, yeah, she had a man who loved her very much and found her sexy and all that. It was great working with Meryl.
Yeah.
Too, and Cher. We had a ball. We all lived in close proximity and it was just a wonderful experience, a great time. It always felt like we were just sort of on the set living together and off the set living together. It was a real communal feeling. We were all young and enjoying each other's company a lot. They had children. It was really, I had really fun time with some of the children that were around at that time, Cher's and Meryl's and Don's children, and Meryl and Don and I became friends on that movie, and we remained somewhat in contact with each other for the rest of our lives. And wonderful people. They're great. She's a great person. So is Don, and Cher's a great, interesting gal. But Mike was, you know, the leader of the little family that we were having, and it was just a really wonderful experience, and I thought really an effective movie.
So this is a really neat little movie. The Blu-ray includes an interview with producer Michael Hausman and trailers and TV spots. And then lastly, one more from Kino, a movie called No Man's Land from 1987.
Charlie Sheen is Ted Varick, crossing the line into No Man's Land.
Don't you think we're pushing our luck? No such thing.
No limits.
This ain't exactly repo work.
This ain't exactly work, period.
No boundaries.
What about this one? Not too shabby, huh? I only steal portions. There's a local outfit stealing portions. My money's on the owner, Ted Varick. Why me? Because you don't act like a cop.
Good turn, Bill.
Welcome to No Man's Land.
Take a look around, Bill. America's finest, the plague. I guess what's important here is that you're having a good time.
So good, because I got you!
I want Varick. Concentrate on Varick.
Rich boys like you turn my stomach.
I don't even know who you are.
I never even knew your name.
I need you to wash my back.
Can't do this anymore. I feel dirty.
Nowhere to turn.
These guys ever give up?
I do this for a living.
No place to hide.
Ted. He's a cop.
Tell me something I don't know.
Coming full speed from Orion Pictures.
Showtime, folks.
No Man's Land.
Says sleek cars, hot women, and life in the fast lane. What rookie cop wouldn't be tempted to go bad? Charlie Sheen, D.B. Sweeney, and Randy Quaid star in this pedal-to-the-metal, full-throttle thriller that's your best bet for curve-hugging, edge-of-your-seat entertainment. Benji Taylor, Sweeney, is a young cop with an eye for cars and fast women. He goes undercover at a Porsche garage that doubles as a chop shop. The seductive world of his target, Ted Varick, Charlie Sheen, may be his undoing. The midnight joyrides, ultra-slick parties, and Varick's sexy sister, Lana Harris, help sway Taylor into believing that his new fast friend has the kind of life he wants, even though Varick may be guilty of much more than car theft, and Taylor may be in much deeper than he thinks. TV veteran Peter Werner directed this action-packed, stylish thriller written by legendary writer-producer Dick Wolfe, Law & Order, and featuring a strong supporting cast that includes Bill Duke, R.D. Call, and Emmett Walsh. So yeah, this is one of those sort of semi-forgotten 80s gems. I like this one a lot. The cast is great, and the sort of setting is like a, I don't know, there's something very 80s about it that makes me think of my days watching VHS movies, just picking stuff off the shelf and going, oh, this looks interesting, and being introduced to actors like D.B. Sweeney. I think this may have been one of the first movies I saw with him. I can't remember if I saw The Cutting Edge first or this, but he's an actor that I like very much and who has receded a bit in terms of his prominence. This disc has an interview with star D.B. Sweeney, an interview with director Peter Werner, audio commentary by Steve Mitchell, producer of King Cohen, and film historian Nathaniel Thompson. So good little features. Cool to see this sort of obscure 80s movie get a nice Blu-ray release. So that is it for this pile of movies. In the meantime, please have a lovely and Blu-ray filled week, and I will talk to you very, very soon.
All right.
can make mama's little